Hello and welcome to another episode of The Endless Shelf. I'm your host, Renata. Each episode, a bookish friend comes to share a book they love with us so we can add it to our shelf. But before they can tell us all about it, they need to answer some questions that will make them walk the imagination plank. If you listened to our last episode, you might be relieved to hear me speaking normally again. That's right, whatever magic had wafted out of the shelf which got Jess and I speaking differently has been safely stored away in an old copy of Paddington Bear. Now, I have done a lot of talking in this podcave in the last year, and that has never happened before. Just to be safe, though, I have brought a jar of Vegemite with me, so that if any mysterious foreign accent finds its way into my voice box, we can write it immediately. So, I can promise you that this episode will not be stopped by poorly imitated regional dialects of any kind. Now, let's meet our guest. Leanne Tanner is a kids' book author currently living in Tasmania. She's been a teacher, a juggler, an editor, a bus driver, a journalist, and an actor. She has had so many awesome adventures in her life so far, and you can really see that in her stories. Leanne's writing is playful, with whimsy and action galore, and always leaves us wanting more. Leanne has a picture book called Ella and the Ocean, and has also written several kids' novel series, including The Rogues, The Keepers, The Hidden series, and her Feathered Crime Fighters books starring Clara and Rita, respectively. Today, she's here to chat with us about the second book in her children's fantasy novel series, Dragons of Hollow, Fledgewitch. Welcome to the shelf, Leanne.
Thank you, Renata, and thanks for such a lovely introduction, but I am a bit nervous about walking the imagination plank.
Oh, well, I'll warn you if there are any sharks around.
Excellent. Okay. Yep.
So, what do you love about kids' books?
I think what I love most about kids' books is that the story in kids' books is usually so strong. You know, like sometimes in adults' books, the story isn't all that strong. You've got interesting characters and stuff. But I really like a book that grabs hold of you on the first page and drags you through the story right to the end so that you just can't bear to stop reading, you can't bear to put the book down. And kids' books are so good at that.
Yep, and I would say yours are one of the best we've got.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
You've had lots of very interesting jobs in your time. Can you tell us about your juggling?
Oh, gosh. I learned to juggle when I was in my 30s, because I was playing a lot of music at the time, and I had read somewhere that juggling was really good for hand-eye coordination and that that could make you a better musician. So I took up juggling. I was sharing a house with a friend, and they used to kind of look warily at me in the mornings, because at night I'd be in my bedroom juggling and they'd hear all these thumping noises as I dropped the balls. But I got better and better and better, and I made up a story to go with my juggling, because just watching somebody juggling is not all that interesting. You know, like, unless they're juggling fire or knives or ducks or something like that, then that's really fun to watch. But otherwise, just watching somebody juggle balls is not all that interesting. So I made up a story about three chooks.
Wow.
And it was these three chooks who were trapped in a cage, and they had to escape. And I worked out all these juggling moves.
Wow.
That kind of worked, that fitted in with the story, you know, so that at one stage I'd throw the ball out to the side and then grab it back, and then I'd throw it up in the air, and then I'd throw it over my shoulder and under my leg and all that sort of stuff. And it all fitted in with the story, and it was really fun.
That's amazing. Oh, my goodness. I wish I'd seen it. That sounds really cool.
I can't do it anymore.
Oh, that's a shame. Do you lick lollipops?
No, I don't. I don't have a particularly sweet tooth when it comes to things like lollipops. I like cake. I like ice cream.
Mm.
But lollipops, nah, not really my thing.
I was concerned that maybe you chew lollipops, which I imagine is quite bad for your teeth.
Oh, I imagine so. And it would sound horrible too in your ears, you know, like that kind of crunchy sound as if bits were breaking off your teeth. That would, I wouldn't like that. No.
Scary stuff. Why can't I speak Mandarin?
Well, obviously you've never eaten enough of them, you know.
No, like, I don't think I have.
You got to peel them and keep eating until the words start coming out of your mouth. There's no other choice.
Okay, you've got to really live it.
You do.
Okay, all right, I think I'm going to try that. What's your favorite part of the story-making process?
Oh.
An impossible choice, I know.
I have so many favorite parts. I love the daydreaming part before I start writing because at that point everything is possible and it's just a matter of, you know, like I walk on the beach, I wander around strange places, I read odd books, I look at pictures and it's little possibilities sliding into my head and I love that part. But I also love editing.
Oh, really?
And a lot of people, I know a lot of people don't like editing, but I love editing because by then I've got so many words on the page, you know, I've got a big chunk of the story on the page and I'm trying to fix it. I'm trying to get it into a shape that really works for the story.
Wow. Gee, I love that. And what a positive attitude to take into editing. I'm sure that I'm not alone in finding editing quite challenging and confronting because you thought something that you wrote earlier was absolute genius and then you read it again and go, oh dear.
Oh yeah. The bits that you thought were absolute genius are hardly ever absolute genius, are they? I find that, yeah, absolutely.
Yep. You live in Tasmania, a part of Australia that is dark for a lot longer than other parts of the country during winter. So how do Tasmanian roosters know when to wake everyone up?
Tasmanian roosters crow at completely random times of the night. Tasmanian roosters.
So they don't know.
Tasmanian roosters. Yeah.
Just make it up.
Tasmanian roosters do not care if it's the right time of night to wake people up. They'll go, oh, I'm awake. Let's crow. Oh my word. It's only 1 a.m. Never mind. I'll crow anyway.
Oh my goodness. All the free spirited roosters live there.
Yep. All the roosters who can't sleep.
What does your kidlit community mean to you?
My kidlit community.
Perhaps particularly the five writers that you talk to on a regular basis.
Hmm? My favourite and best part of the kidlit community is my writers group, which consists of me, Deborah Abella, Tristan Banks, Sarah Armstrong and Zanny Louise. And it is just such a lovely, lovely community. We meet once a month online. And we send each other bits of whatever we're writing beforehand, a few chapters, you know. And then we get together and we talk about each other's work and we give each other 15 minutes each and we tell each other what we love about it. And then we ask each other questions. We just give each other so much feedback and so much help. And we all feel as if having these people to talk to about our writing has made us better writers.
Isn't that so special with that group of writers? It's almost like your books are family to each other. It's like Fledgewitch is the cousin of Tristan Banks novels and things like that. That's just really cool to think of.
It really is. And we all kind of feel as if we've played a part in each other's books, you know, because we've all given feedback on them and we've encouraged it, you know, because I mean, every writer has times when they are tearing their hair and saying, oh my God, I can't write. You know, this is hopeless. I'm dreadful and terrible. And when you've got a group like this that knows your writing and that loves your writing and can say with all genuineness, no, look, you know, this is what you are doing is so great. That is just so valuable. I can't, it's the most enormously important part of my creative life.
It's like, they know your true voice, and when you're too close to the work, they can remind you of what your voice is and make sure it doesn't get lost in the mayhem.
Oh, my word, yes. And when you're being really self-indulgent and getting too tricky, they pull you up.
Ooh. Can you give us a speech to teach us about the effects of bleach on the beach?
oh, look, the effect of bleach on the beach is very worrying. You see, where I live, we used to have these birds called sooty oyster catchers. Now, they were very happy being sooty oyster catchers, and they had no problem with it. They were sooty all over except for their red beaks and their red legs. Then there was the big bleach incident, which has capital letters in it. You know, it's quite famous as being the Tasmanian bleach incident. And as a result of that, all those sooty oyster catchers turned into pied oyster catchers. They now have white chests, white feathers on their chests. It's incredibly embarrassing for them.
Wow.
It's worrying. They are not quite sure how it happened. The whole thing has been covered up, you know, like this massive cover-up by the people who caused the big bleach incident, but can't cover up a pied oyster catcher.
No, no, they stand out more. They're white now.
They do, yeah.
That's terrible. I know it can be hard to choose, but which genre of kids' books do you get the most joy out of as an author?
Oh, I think fantasy. You know, like fantasy is very much my first love. I read a lot. I love reading fantasy. I've always read fantasy when I was a kid and as an adult. And I love writing fantasy because what I love is low fantasy, not so much high fantasy. You know, high fantasy is kings and queens and dragons, though I must admit Dragons of Hallow is kind of a little bit high fantasy. Mm. But the sort of fantasy I love most is kind of people going about their ordinary lives and then a bit of magic sneaks in.
Yeah.
So that is what I call low fantasy. And I love that because it contains so many possibilities for our own lives. Mm. You know, it contains the possibilities of walking around a corner and finding a dragon's egg, or climbing into the roof space of your house and finding a strange sword that no one knew was there. So yeah, fantasy really, really appeals to me. I mean, having said that, I also, Clara and Rita, A Clue for Clara and Rita's Revenge, they were kind of fantasy because I haven't yet come across another chook that wants to be a detective or another duck that is a poet. So I guess you could call them fantasy, but they were much more contemporary. You know, they were set in Australia, present day. Mm. So they were very low fantasy. They were about as low fantasy as you can get.
Yeah.
But yeah, fantasy is totally my jam.
So I suppose it's like the fantasy genre is a bit of a spectrum, and you like that grey area in the middle that feels like it could leak out into our lives.
Yes. Yes. And I like the idea of it being a spectrum too, because it means you've got a really wide range to play around on.
And absolutely.
And I never quite know which end of the spectrum I'm going to be playing on next, but it will be somewhere in there.
Wonderful. What came first, the phoenix or the egg?
Oh, interesting question. It's like the chicken and the egg, isn't there? Except that there's flames involved, and flames make things very, very different. I suspect the fire came first.
Nice.
Yeah, the fire came first.
I think so.
The fire, as the fire burnt down, there was an egg sitting in the flames.
Wow, I love that idea. Mm. Yes, I think you're right. Do you have any projects on the way?
I have a picture book coming out. Jonathan Bentley and I have a picture book coming out in July.
Wow.
We teamed up to do Ella in the Ocean a few years ago, and that was a beautiful book.
It is.
But we've got another one coming out in, as I said, in July. It's called When the Lights Went Out. It's about a little kid who lives in a street, and they're all snug and cozy at home one night, and then suddenly the lights went out, and it's scary. And
yeah, that's beautiful. Are you ready to talk about Fledwitch now?
Oh, yes. Yes, yay! I am.
Okay, so we start with Brim, who is 10 years old.
Yep.
And definitely not a witch.
Definitely not a witch, even though she has woken up this morning with these tiny feathers sprouting out of her elbow, which is pretty scary because feathers on the elbows is, you know, it's a mark of being a witch.
It is. Oh, dear.
She's trying to hide them. She's trying to pretend to herself that they're chilblains. And then she sees a car because she lives in the high mountains of Quill. Then she sees this enormous black car coming up the mountain. Wow. And it stops outside her cottage. And it's Count Zakhar and Countess Xantha from the School for Prevention of Witches. And they have come to take her away.
Oh, that's not nice.
It's not.
Poor Brim.
I know.
Oh, my goodness.
Scary stuff.
What's she going to do?
I know. It's really a terrifying beginning to a story. It terrifies me.
And so do they take her away
then?
They
do take her away. And her parents and her brother are so shocked that they don't even try and stop them, which is even more awful.
They're going to have to live with the guilt of that moment, aren't they? That's terrible.
Yes.
Okay, yeah. And so where are they taking Brim?
They're taking her to the School for Prevention of Witches, which is a whole day's drive away. And it's a school where Count Zakhar and Countess Xantha, their job is to stop these kids who are just starting to grow feathers on their elbows, so they're not yet fully fledged witches. They are fledged witches. They're they're not complete witches yet. But the thing about witches, not only do they have feathers growing from their elbows, but they have no heartbeat. Because at some stage in their lives, they have given away their heartbeat in exchange for great power. Ooh. And so Count Zakhar and Countess Xantha's job is to try and cure these kids before they give in to the temptation to give away their heartbeats in exchange for power.
Goodness me, that sounds difficult. And so are we going to see anyone from Spellhound come along in this story?
Yes, we are. We absolutely are. A couple of characters from Spellhound. First of all, there's Queen Rose, who has a secret, which I won't tell you what it is.
Oh, no.
But Queen Rose is going to end up also in the School for Prevention of Witches.
Oh,
and
dear.
So is a certain character who used to be a sword and who is now a letter opener.
Oh, okay, a letter opener. Yep. Excellent.
This particular character has been a sword, a cake knife, a belt buckle, several other things, but it enters the story as a letter opener.
Excellent.
And is one of my favourite characters to write. It is so cynical and sarcastic.
Cuts to the truth,
yeah.
Nice. That's very clever.
And my other favourite character in this book, of course, is Snort.
Oh, yes.
Who is a horned glob who lives on the other side of the meadow from Brim's family's cottage. And the thing that you have to understand about horned globs is that they are incredibly forgettable. So if a horned glob came galloping into this room right now, I would see it and I would say, "What on earth?" And then I would go back to talking about something else entirely because I would have forgotten about it.
Is that a magic that they possess? Or?
Yeah, it's a type of magic, and it's kind of strange because all the horned globs in the world are supposed to live in the floating forest. You know, there are not supposed to be any horned globs outside the floating forest. But there's this little family of horned globs living in the high mountains of Quill. So Snort and his mum and his aunt, are forgetting who they are, and so Snort needs to find a dragon because he thinks that will fix things.
Oh, no. Well, I guess he's not going to find one at that school because they say no witches and no dragons.
Exactly. I mean, both witches and dragons are illegal in Quill, so I don't know how he's going to do this.
No. And if there are any secrets lying around, we're not going to know about it, are we? Because there's none allowed.
There are no secrets in this book. Mm. Absolutely no secrets in this book because they are also illegal in Quill. And if there were any secrets, I would not be able to tell you about them because they're against the law.
My goodness, that is a very strict place to live.
It really is.
I feel like I would end up in this school. I feel like I'm going to grow feathers out of my elbows any minute now.
It's always a danger. You know, like I check my elbows several times a day just in case.
Good. Are Brim and Queen Rose going to become friends?
Well, maybe not. It's kind of hard to tell because they both have secrets that they're not telling each other. And if the other one found out about that secret, that could be disastrous.
Oi, give me those back.
Who knows?
Did you hear something?
Yes. It sounds like someone else is here. Hang on, let me just go and check. I think it's coming from outside.
Do you know how hard it is to grow a leaf? I worked really hard on those and I need you to give them back right now.
It appears we have a young tree just outside the cave and she seems to think that we're stealing her leaves.
What? What? It's nothing to do with us.
No.
Oh, for heaven's sake, hang on. It's not us, okay? It's just trees lose their leaves. It's got nothing to do with us.
It's very natural. It's okay.
Do you think that'll fix it?
She doesn't seem like she's listening.
This is why I don't like humans.
Oh, that's not very nice.
Stop stealing my leaves. Dearie me. I need those.
If only we had a Minchwiggin or two here. I reckon they could sort her out.
Minchwiggins always make things better.
Just because you like them doesn't mean that you can take them. Give them back.
I'm going to go out on a limb here, Anata. Do you think she could benefit from some pruning?
I definitely think she could. Sadly, I don't think it's going to leave us alone. I think it's time for us to cut down our episode.
It's a great pity, Renata.
I cannot believe this is happening. Well, thank you for coming on the show, Leon.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thieves!
Yeah.
Thieves!
Bye!
Bye!
Thank you for listening to The Endless Shelf. We're sorry to leave you like this, but Renata can't host the podcast right now because there's a cranky little tree that won't leave them alone. That poor little tree. It's only natural to get upset when you lose something. Renata and Leon weren't trying to take the leaves, it was the wind blowing them into the cave. That little tree needs to go and embark on a journey of self-discovery. Until next time, make sure you go and find Leon Tanner's books in bookshops and libraries near you. It's endless fun! Bookie, have you seen my rake?